It's Monday the 21st of January and you're listening to the Red Army Roundup. I'm your host Paul Hinton and as ever I'm joined by a very happy Sean Phillips and Aaron Wren. Hello gents.
Hello there Paul.
4-point weekend. 8-point weekend actually.
Nice 8-point swing. Yeah, we're probably going to mention the home doubleheader against Belfast a little bit to get the show underway. Where we got 4 points, as Aaron mentioned. We will, as ever then, pick a player of the week. The weekly reminder for Aaron to not think about it until I ask him. So that
I go in this time.
Oh, God. Everyone's excited. Stay tuned for Aaron being ready for player of the week. And we have had loads of stuff through on social media since the weekend. It's amazing what a 4-point weekend over Belfast will do. So we'll go through your Ramite suggestions, which I think we've had quite a few of. And we have got a whole list of burning questions that have come in from loads of you, which we'll hopefully have time to get through them all and discuss before we preview a busy week of away games for the Devils. 3 away games on the bounce in Sheffield, Nottingham, and then 5. So plenty of us for us to talk about. I suppose we might as well start with the Belfast games. Sean, I think probably fair to say that probably about 2/3 of the way through the first period on Saturday, maybe expecting the weekend might have gone a little bit differently. Belfast came into Cardiff absolutely flying, I suppose, as you'd expect, and took a deserved lead through Colin Shields after 9 minutes.
Yeah, very, very up-tempo start from the Giants. They're a very, very high forechecking team, and they try and force you into making mistakes. They were hitting everything that moved very cleanly, and they... they deservedly took the lead. I think it was about the halfway mark through the first period through Colin Shields. I think it's one that Bouncier went back straight through the wickets. But all in all, you have to say that it was a deserved lead, and that they were you did think that, you know, with the amount of fans and the atmosphere they were creating and the momentum that they built in that sort of opening 10 minutes that it could have gone very, very differently.
Yeah, and Aaron, Devils struggled really, I think, to get any significant zone time. Giants relentlessly forechecked Devils, and so it needed a bit of a change up. And you know, for you, were you happy? You know, with obviously happy when Mike Hedden equalised on the power play, but you know, overall on that first period, were you relieved to go in at 1-1?
It was, you know, I think if we didn't grab that equalising goal, I think we could have been looking at a very different game. Like Sean said, Giants started so well. I did get a little bit worried, but I think, you know, as soon as we got a couple of power plays and settled down a little bit, you know, we found our rhythm and that Mike Hedden scored a beauty on the power play. And yeah, it seemed as soon as we hit our rhythm, we seemed unstoppable in that second period. We were, you know, some of the best hockey I've seen us play this year. We were absolutely incredible. And, you know, it was refreshing to watch because, like, after the first 10 minutes and when Bouncy let that goal in, I was a little bit frustrated. You know, like Sean said, it was when Bouncy wanted back, and I thought it was going to be one of those nights where, you know, it's a battle of the goalies and Bouncy, you know, was going to struggle a little bit, but, you know, he made some absolute key saves all through the game and kept us in there sometimes. And, you know, I bet battle of the goalies and our goalie come out on top. So I was buzzing, to be honest. After that second period, you know.
Felt a very different game after the second period. And, you know, in terms of, you know, goals, it was just the one from Aaron's man, Lane Ulmer. But the game had swung, you know, dramatically to the Devil's zone, and you seemed to mix it up. And do you think it was for you a switch in the way Devils played, or just the intensity that the Giants came out with in the first, that perhaps they just couldn't maintain that for 60 minutes?
Yeah, I think that's it. I think overall, I think I chatted about it. I think it was last week or whether it was with you in person. The Belfast are a very, very good side, and they can take it to you better than any other team in the league for 10, 15 minutes. But over a consistent 60-minute game, I don't think you can play that way and be successful. And that looked the case. We played very, very well in the second, and I think we were solid enough through the whole game. I just think Belfast were particularly good in the first 10, 15 minutes, and that's what led to them taking the lead. And obviously they tail off then, they lose a bit of energy and burn themselves out a little bit too soon. And we just keep our levels to the same as we did in the first. We managed to contain their high spells of pressure and their speed and kept them at bay, weathered the storm and come out in the second and keep to our game. And we played brilliantly. I thought that the second period was much, much better. I was quite surprised to only go in with a one goal lead, but it's a one goal lead that I felt we deserved, and we were in for a very, very exciting third period.
Yeah, big for the Devils as well, with just 3 seconds left in the second period. Dustin Jonger took a tripping minor, which gave the Devils almost a full power play to open up the third, and whilst we didn't score on it, scored just 20 seconds after he came back onto the ice through Gleeson Fournier. And you are at 4-2. You feel that, I think the game felt very good. We'd obviously had a good second period. Any nerves when Darcy Murphy put it back on the power play?
3-1.
3-1, not 4-2, sorry, yeah. Darcy Murphy pulling it back to a one-goal game halfway through the third, with nerves setting in, Aaron, for you?
No, not at all. I wasn't worried. With that penalty getting taken at the end of the second, you know, we're personally in a great position. And I thought we was a better team in the entire third period, even when Belfast Giants did score. You know, I feel like the goal was a little bit against the run of play, and I thought we was incredible. Kept them to the outside, didn't give them a lot of options. You know, they threw everything at us, and you know, I think Lord is very good in that third period at, you know, rotating them lines quickly. And, you know, our penalty kill, maybe not on stats, but we've got some of the best penalty killers in the league. And when you've got five of them on the ice at a time, you know, it's going to be hard to score against. And, you know, even when they pulled their goalie, I was still full of confidence. And Joey Martin done an incredible job to rob the puck and find the pass for Ben Rolio to slaughter him. And game over. And that was the weekend done for me, that was. I would have been happy if that was it.
sure. Aaron just mentioned, obviously, after the power play goal, another 2-minute minor from Matt Pope with 3.5 minutes left that we killed and scored just after. Were you surprised that Adam Keefe didn't pull Bescarani pretty much until the power play was over and passed up the opportunity of a 6-on-4? Or, you know, would you have expected him to wait a bit longer?
No, I'm not really that surprised. You look at how good Belfast power play is, and I think he put a little bit of faith in his power play, which is good to see a coach do. It's one of the better power plays in the league, and there was enough time in the game for them to not score on the power play and then think about pulling him. So, yeah, I think that was a, you know, in hindsight, it's, you know, it's easy to say you should have done this, you should have done that, but I think it was the right call. At the time, like I said, they're a good power play unit and they've always got the opportunity to pull the netminder, which they did later on. They did generate a couple of chances and ultimately we managed to rob the puck, and Martin unselfishly passes to Ben Davolio, who gets the empty net goal to give us the win. And yeah, I don't think that we can, I think it was the right call in the moment from Adam Keith.
That's a couple of people around me have mentioned it. I didn't expect him to, but. Just wondered on your take. So that goal with just over a minute left meant that the nerves that were quite frayed were a little bit relaxed, and it's always nice to be able to enjoy the last minute of a game quite confident that it's going to go your way rather than holding on to that single goal lead. As Aaron said, that was 2 points in the bag. I know you said you'd have been happy, but if Sunday hadn't gone well, Aaron, I'm sure that wouldn't have been the case. And Sunday looked, well, it felt quite similar to me, Sean, that the first half, maybe a little bit longer of the first period, you know, felt like Belfast had the edge again, but you know, not to the extent and the intensity that they came out with on Saturday. But once the Devils weather that storm, we didn't do too badly just after Sean.
Yeah, agreed. It sort of it seemed as intense for the first sort of 5-6 minutes, but I think the opening 10 minutes of the first game, we barely created a chance or got into the zone, and in the Sunday game, we did get a couple more chances off, so it wasn't quite so one-sided, and we matched their intensity for the first as well. So I think you know, for the first couple of minutes, so we sort of stabilised that, and they sort of thought, you know, if Cardiff are going to come out and play this way against us, we're not going to be able to run our game for that whole 10 minutes. So they sort of eased off the gas just a little bit to make sure they had a little bit left in them for the rest of the first. But ultimately, it didn't quite work out that well for the Belfast Giants.
First goal, Aaron, couldn't really be a more fitting scorer. Marking his 800th game in all elite league competitions. Mark Richardson gets the goal, and he doesn't get a lot of goals, but you know, not bad timing from him there.
No, definitely not. You know, Mark Richardson seems to be the guy. You know, he doesn't score the big goals, the many goals, but he does score some big goals. And I thought, you know, that first goal, it came at the perfect time, whereas we got scored on last time, that on Saturday night. Sunday night, we was first to score. I think that set the tone for us. And, you know, it was a little bit of a machine gun in a shooting range after that. And, you know, straight off the face-off, we get another goal. Matt Pope pulls an absolute beauty of a move on Beshkowani, made him look a little bit silly, and it's 2-0. And then I think it was even less, well, a little bit longer after that, and I think we get a penalty, was it? Was it a penalty? I can't remember.
No, there was another even strength goal there, Bryce Reddick.
Oh, yeah, Bryce Reddick beats him glove side, that's right, isn't it?
Uh-huh.
Beat him glove side, and within less than a minute, well, just over, I think it was, actually.
A minute and 11 seconds.
We were 3-0 up, and, you know, a lot of people thought it was game over, but I wasn't one of those, because I know how good Belfast can be. But, you know, it could have been, you know, if I think it was a poor coaching move on Belfast's part. If I was Keith, I would have called a timeout after we scored straight off face-off, because Belfast were completely lost and clueless, and it was as if we was doing a skating drill, and there was no defence, no forwards, and just Matt Pope going in on a goalie. And yeah, I would call the timeout after that one. You know, they could have definitely been able to turn around a little bit easier. You know, two goals deficit is a mountain to climb, but three goals is something else. Even though I know they had 40 minutes to do it in, but that's a long, long time. Big amount of goals, that is.
Yes, especially coming into Vio Arena, it's not somewhere where you want to be chasing the game by that amount. But Sean, to be fair to Belfast, had a couple of early power play opportunities in the second period, and you made them both count. And you know, just over 5 minutes into the second, back to a one goal game, and things were looking a bit different. But so your thoughts on how that went? I think you'd already mentioned that Belfast special teams in terms of the power play were on form, and you know, they definitely were able to demonstrate it there.
Yeah, and after the first period, there were a lot of people, like Aaron said, saying maybe you know it's done, this, that, and the other. We'd already won the game, but you look at the couple of years ago, we were in Belfast down 3-0 with 20 minutes to go, and we came back to win that game 4-3 in regulation, and you cannot. Rule Belfast out, especially with 40 minutes to go. And, you know, the old cliche, if they can score three in the first period, we can score three in the second. And that was nearly the case. Patrick Dwyer plays an absolutely blinding pass to Kyle Bourne, who throws it over bounds. He's unlucky that he has to spread quite so far to get it, because he did get a big piece of it. It just sort of goes over the top and behind him. And the second one is massively, massively fortunate for the Giants, but they do the right thing on the power play. They put the puck on net. And Bryce Reddick is trying to kill off, block the shot, and it just goes off his skate and in. And they catch a break, much like Bryce Reddick did for his third. You know, the shot came in from the point off I think it may have been Schistel, and the Riley gets a piece on it, and the Reddick finds himself all alone in front with an empty net in front of him, and you know, you give it one for one, and at the end of the second, if I'm honest, I was in a way a little bit glad that was the case, because if we'd have gone into the third with that 3-goal cushion, I know it would have been more comfortable, but you're always at the risk that the guys will switch off. And I feel like that Belfast getting 2 goals, one was just down to the, you know, we made a defensive lapse and they scored a good goal. The second's down to pure luck. And I think the guys knew that they had to work hard to get back in the game, and that it's just a bounce that could take that lead away from them, and they had to get back to playing their best. We did shut off for a little while in the second. So I was a bit glad in a way of that need to get back to our best that we'd been in that first period, if you know what I mean.
Yes, yeah. To force us to play rather than...
Yes.
And it didn't take us long in the third period to do just that. You know, in quite an underwhelming skate up the ice from Evan Mosey. show just blistering pace to get in and, you know, pull a move on Bascarani and get that lead back up to 2 goals. And I think it was...
Yeah, left Vandermeer for absolute dust.
Oh, yeah. Once he got going, you just... The only question was whether he was going to score. He was winning that foot race from the moment that he took off, really. I think it just... He just went up like he had a rocket up his backside. I was just going to say, it felt like quite a comfortable end to the game, I felt, Aaron. And you're looking at the game sheet now, is Belfast only managed 5 shots in that third period. So, you know, a massive testament to the Devils' ability to see out the game, Aaron.
Yeah, definitely. Like I said, I think Lorden just, you know, he executed his game plan to a T. You know, we had that lead and he knew exactly what to do, and the players just bought in and, you know, not made it look easy, but, you know, the way we was closing down the Giants from top line to bottom, all the way through the lineup, defence and forwards, you know, everyone chipped in, and it was a really good gritty third, like, you know, end to the third period. And, you know, I didn't feel like Belfast had a look in, and even though they got all that quality and all that goal scoring in their lineup, I think, you know, we just played a game plan to a T, and it was nice to see us be able to compete against like the top level. And it's like, there's no two better teams in this league than us and the Giants, and it was an absolute spectacle to watch all weekend, and I'm glad we was the ones that come out on top.
Yeah, and Joey Martin's power play goal with just over 7 minutes left, Sean, just meant that the Devils, you know, in an amazing sort of thing to say, we're probably able to keep a little something in the tank for the 3 games this week, that, you know, the game was pretty much done and it was just a case of seeing it out then.
Yeah, definitely. And just want to give a little bit of a shout out in that it gave us the ability to roll that fourth line out there even more towards the end of the third period. But I just want to give those guys some credit because they were absolutely tremendous all weekend. Matthew Myers had an immense weekend. Sam Duggan was excellent Saturday, even better on Sunday. I just thought overall they were such an effective line for us and matched the intensity that the Giants brought to whichever line was up against them. And I just thought they were tremendous all weekend. And like you said, yeah, having that bit of time to sort of ease off and put them out there, you know, for a couple more minutes and maybe give, you know, the likes of Martin, Dixon, you know, your high intensity players. Dixon obviously is an absolute workhorse. To give him a couple of shifts off and that sort of thing to make, like you said, maybe keep a little something in the tank for what's to come was excellent, and it was a great power play goal, tic-tac-toe as well, just textbook power play from Benty, Elmer and Martin. Oh, and just a testament as well, over the course of the weekend, the noise in the building was absolutely tremendous.
For consistent time, that's the loudest, I think, since we've moved into Ice Cream Wales, Viola as it is now. And I think, you know, a lot of that credit goes to the Belfast fans as well.
Yes.
brought a lot of numbers and brought a lot of noise as well while they were there. And it was great to see the Devils fans respond. And you know, I think it just, Saturday especially, the first, before the game and through the first period, both sets of fans sort of pretty much non-stop chanting. Just reminded me of the cup finals we've had in the Ice Arena Wales the last couple of years. And just that proper party atmosphere, it was awesome. I absolutely loved the weekend. And worth noting, we were without Drew Schistel on Saturday and Joey Haddad for the whole weekend. So you know, that first win was, you know, an import short. And the fourth line, at that stage, getting minutes, obviously rolling with a couple of other imports, you know, interchanging onto the line to make up the numbers on it. So, you know, really impressive that fourth line did as well as it did, given that they only had a set of line on Sunday. So, all round, a rather lovely weekend. And you know, while we're talking, as we're there, it stretches the lead for the Devils to 9 points over Belfast. Belfast with one game in hand on us. So, you know, a 7 point actual lead, which is a very handy place to be at this stage of the year. You know, by no means is it wrapped up, which I think has been said in some quarters. You know, we've still got to go over there for two. But Aaron, if you'd have said middle of November, when we were not doing so well and after that 8-1 loss, that we'd be 9 points clear of Belfast halfway through January, I think most people would have laughed at you.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I think it's just testament, because even though we was in that slump and we weren't picking up the W's, we were still grinding out, you know, the overtime wins and the overtime losses and losing in the shootouts. And, you know, those points went a long, long way. I think there was a Steelers fan that put a tweet out that in our last 23 games, we've won 19, and three out of four of those we took at least a point from. So, you know, how many points did we drop totally? That's and then
5 points out of the last 46 available have been dropped. So that's insane.
That's incredible. I don't think even last year we was at that point, at this point in the season with stuff like that. You know, we did go on a couple of runs last year, but, you know, the way we've been consistent in picking up points, you know, I didn't think, you know, the 1 point games where you're picking up point would count as much as they do now. Like, it's incredible. To think 2 months ago, we was all cursing everyone out, and you know, the way we was reacting and stuff to where we are now, it's why we all love the sport. It's just incredible. And 1 minute you go from the top to the bottom, and the next you're right back up at the top again. And let's just stay here this time, is it? No more. But yeah,
I like being at the top. It's fun. Class. And worth noting, Sean, those 23 games. The game before that little run started was the 8-1 loss that, you know, I think you said on the podcast afterwards that maybe that was going to be the kick up the backside that the team needed. And it's worked out quite well, I think.
Yeah, you know, we had that absolute drub into the Giants. That was a big wake-up call for us. And then right in the middle of it, when we maybe weren't playing so well, but, you know, still picking up the game, you know, victories by the odd goal or so, or winning overtime, just grinding stuff out. We obviously got knocked out of the Challenge Cup, which was a big blow to our organisation, let alone our, you know, our fans and the team, which we said at the time it was going to have a massive financial impact. And again, that's the case where last, you know, a couple of years ago, we weren't winning our Challenge Cup games and we just about limped through, and our losses have come in the right place. You know, would you drop one of those overtime points for a place in the Challenge Cup semi-finals? Probably yes. Would you take an 8 point gap over a 9 and a place in the semis? Of course you would. But you have to take the positives from it, and it's built us to where, it's got us to where we are now in terms of motivating the guys to be even better and put in the extra work. And yeah, it's been a really, really successful spell for us. And, you know, let's not jinx it. It's not over yet.
I was going to say, long may it continue. Just about to,
On the note as well, that Gleeson Fournier's point streak finally came to an end on Sunday.
It did. Was it 16 games you got to in the end, Aaron? I think you...
It was... I'll get up where I posted to you now. 2 seconds. Fill the gap, fill the gap, fill the gap.
And that was some of the best fill in the gaps that we've ever had on Red Army Rambler.
Still filling that gap.
Styled that out so nobody will have noticed. So.
Nope, no one knows any different.
It was 25.
Yeah, it was 25 points in 15 games, and he had 8 multi-point games, and his plus-minus was plus 22. So
excellent.
That guy is a joke. Absolute joke. I'm gutted it came to an end though, because like I think it was last week he had the second assist on the game winning goal that happened like right at the end of the game, and I wish like something like that could have happened yesterday, but you know, all good things must come to an end except for this season. And where we are on the table, but
well, you just have to start another streak on Wednesday. I think is probably the best way to go. We should probably choose a player of the week now. Aaron, you promised us you had one ready, so let's go.
I'm going for a guy that never ever gets mentioned at this, especially this year. You know, Richie always used to be the unsung hero, but I think you know he's getting a lot more credit these days. Because he deserves it, for one. But I'm going to go for Matthew Myers. I think in both games, when he stepped on that ice, he made an incredible difference. He was, you know, he literally like a dog chasing a ball, closing players down, giving them no space, no time to make any moves, turning the puck over, you know, and he had a good couple of chances himself. I thought, you know, he didn't get a lot of minutes, but when he was on that ice, he was changing the game, he was changing the tempo, and, you know, he's like with Sam Duggan, and sometimes we did rotate other forwards on the line and stuff, but Sam Duggan exactly the same, but for me, it was Matthew Myers. I thought it was, you know, week in, week out, he always does the same kind of thing, but I think he was definitely one of the standouts for me this weekend. He was absolutely incredible.
Excellent. So that's Matthew Myers. Sean, who gets your votes?
You just have such a massive list of players you can give it to. But for me, this weekend was all about the battle of the goalies, and our goalie came out on top and made some absolutely tremendous saves against one of the best offensive units in the league. So he's back to his best. Can't give the guy enough credit. Like I said, some of the stops were unreal. We faced a lot of 3-on-2s, some good high-quality offense. They didn't bury many. They put a lot high, but the saves bounds he made were vital. And, you know, through the course of the two games, I don't think you could say anyone other than our goalie. He played 120 excellent minutes. So, Ben Bounds for me.
And we definitely got a winner. As you said, John, it's you could almost pick any name and make a really solid case for them to get it this week. But Ben Bounds for me as well. You know, there's been talk about, you know, Bascarani, you know, has come in and up the goaltending standards in the league, which, you know, is the case. But Ben Bounds has shown that he's not being behind. He's going with him. He's had an absolute stormer and only conceded 4 goals against a great offence. And only one of those goals was 5-on-5. So, and you know, as discussed, one of them was an unlucky bounce off a defenceman as well. So facing 54 shots, letting 4 goals in, can't fault him. And it was great to see him have an absolute stormer of a weekend there. So congratulations to Ben Bounds. We've got Ramites, Sean. We've tweeted, you know, we're recording 2 weeks in a row and everything. This is new year, new us.
Uncharacteristic. Hashtag new me.
Yeah, let's go.
Okay, Tony Dickin, at TonyBaloney36. Love the speed and composure Mosey showed in scoring his goal. Is he the most underwhelming signing ever?
I feel like you're never going to live down the fact that you've considered that an underwhelming signing. And he is definitely the most underwhelming signing we've ever had.
Okay. All right. How many times have I said it? I hold my hands up. I was wrong. Tony Woodward at Tiger Temmy. Love the fourth line in Myers and Duggan. Really stepped up this weekend. Hate the Dallas fans saying the league is already over, which we've gone through in our earlier segment. Dominic Bate, at Dom Bate, love the work rate of our unsung heroes, Mo, Myers, Richie and Duggan. Really impressed with how Livingston has fitted straight into the team in some huge games. I'm very impressed with Evan Mosey. Love the all-round team ethic of the Devils over arguably a more talented Giants side. Aaron, is that a fair reflection? Are the Giants overall a more talented side than the Devils?
I think if you look through the lineup compared to ours, I definitely think they've got a lot more standout quality players than us. You know, like, you got Darth, if I list them, I'll be here all day, so I'm not even going to bother. But, you know, some key ones like Darcy Murphy, you know, I think he scored close to almost 30, like nearly, it's not on 30 goals, but it's early, like late 20s already this season. Blair Riley is up there in point scoring. That Kyle Bourne scored 4 against us in that 8-1 drubbing. You know, they've got scoring right through their lineup. I think they really do have some outstanding players. I think, you know, and, you know, even with Beskrowani, what he is an absolute outstanding goalkeeper. And I think his stats before the weekend is goals against were less than 2. I think it's like, it was like 1.89, which is, you know, that is incredible for any league, let alone our league where, you know, games are quite high scoring. So they, you know, they're definitely a team full of talent. And, you know, if Keith can keep a couple of them players, I see no doubt in my mind that give them a year or two, you know, they'll be in our seat and, you know, we could be chasing them for the league because the quality in that lineup is just unreal. I just think they need a few more, you know, another year or two together, a couple of key players, maybe change that. You know, I think I know Sean probably won't just agree with me, but Jim Vandermeer, you know, he's a decent player. He's got a good hockey IQ. But I just think his legs laying him down at the moment. You know, Evan Mosey paced him. I know Evan Mosey's one of the fastest players in the league, granted. But, you know, if that was any other D-man, like, say, anyone of our D-men, could have potentially stopped Mosey or got in his way somehow, but Vandermeer didn't have legs. I think it's time for him to, if Giants want to progress, I think it's time for him to move on, but, you know, they got quality through their lineup. It's not like some teams where they have a top six and that's about it. You know, from top line to the fourth line, I think they're an incredible team.
Paul, anything to add?
I think I agree. But I think sort of the incredible team part is on paper, they're an incredible team. I think this weekend especially showed that in terms of gelling and being a team, I think that's where the Devils are, you know, the outstanding. That's the difference, is the way that we are a full team. Whereas, you know, I think as Aaron said, there's maybe some areas that Belfast will look to tweak again. And yeah, that's definitely the difference, is the work rate and the way Lord's got the team gelled.
Yeah, and maybe the balance of it as well. You know, we've talked before, you probably won't, well, Joey Martin's are probably the exception, being a 200-foot player, but you won't win a championship with, you know, 15 of those in your lineup. So I suppose the balance of it will add to it as well.
I also think, Keith tinkers with his lineup a lot. You know, where Lord gives a couple of our guys, you know, a benefit of the doubt for a couple of shifts, blah, blah, blah. You know, Keith started with a different,
different starting lineup on Sunday. Yeah, he changed his minds around. Yeah,
he swapped it. I noticed that Dwyer was icing with Riley and Darcy Blake. No, Darcy Blake. What am I on? Darcy Murphy, and you know, and then I wouldn't even give it, like, you know, after we scored them 3 goals, he was back playing on a different line again. I think I don't think Keith is given, you know, enough time for his players to, you know, form get that gel in the lines to generate anything. You know, if he kept them lines the way they were Saturday night, you know, Sunday, it could have been a completely different story, and, you know, they could have found their feet and beat us. But, you know, when you tinker with your lines that much, I think, you know, it's going to give issues, and that's why they're not working well as a team right now. They, you know, how can you expect 3 players to find that sweet spot if you don't let them play together, kind of thing?
For sure. Dan Acton at Daniel said, loved the pace and physicality, and that from 9 goals scored over 2 games from 9 different scorers. Hated the officiating over the 2 games, very inconsistent. You may disagree, but a lot of calls missed for both sides, mainly against us. I'm not biased at all. Only noticeable in the second game more than anything, Paul. A couple of things Belfast were getting away with were getting called on us, but were the officials, a hindrance over the weekend rather than a help?
I think Saturday was a very well officiated game. I think they let the game flow, which, as much as we moan about missed calls, is what we want as fans. You want the game to be decided 5-on-5 unless anything bad's happening. Did think on Sunday that there felt like there was so many times we were driving the zone, players without the pucks were just constantly being dragged or nudged or pushed, and that was just being let go. And then Benty got called for a really soft interference penalty at the start of the second period. That's the one that sticks in my mind, is like the biggest frustration, that the interference calls weren't being called mostly. I think Dan's point that there were missed calls on both sides, they usually do even out. That's one that sticks in the mind. I think potentially the hit to Mosey.
Yeah.
There was a hit to Mosey through the boards, got called a late hit. Felt it could have been boarding. It was a hit that was going up. It could have been checking to the head. But my interpretation of the late hit rule, the way it happened, I think it should have been more than a 2, if that's what they were calling. But, mistakes do happen, I think. But on the whole, I thought it was probably quite a well-refereed game, but a weekend, but Saturday definitely more so.
Okay.
Just to add, I think the Giants probably looked at the way the game was refereed on Saturday and maybe adjusted their game plan a little bit to take account of the fact that things were being allowed to be let go, and they just pushed the envelope a bit further than us. And, credit to them, play the refs. And
That's the way it went. John Oakes at John A. Oakes. Loved an unexpected 4-point weekend. Hated not having a ticket for Sunday. And I think we do have one more. Sorry, 2 more. Jason Manley at Duke_Aardvark. Good. 4 points, 4 points, 4 points. Did I mention 4 points? Bad. No one had a go at David Rutherford. As we were all obviously very, very disappointed. I have, moderated that slightly just for the PG show. But when our adult version goes live, never, then it'll definitely get put in as is. Kenwyn Jones at Kenwyn64. Love 4 points and hate head hits. Obviously, Paul, you just referred to the Evan Mosey one on Saturday. I think he took one on Sunday as well that got just called a 2-minute elbow call. But other than that, thank you very, very much for your mom. It's great to have so many of them and such a diversity in them as well. It's great, always great to hear your thoughts. So keep sending them in. We love hearing them, reading them out, and you get to be part of our show.
Well, we might as well stick with our listeners doing the work for us and move straight on to the burning questions. I think we've got one from Lewis Hawkins first, Sean.
Yeah, Lewis Hawkins at Devil Hawkins. On Saturday, the Giants come at us with probably the most effective and aggressive forecheck I've seen in the Elite League, and shows Andrew Lord has a plan B with leaving a guy up high to counter it. Was the result a player masterclass or a tactical one by Lordo? Paul, we've seen it a couple of times from teams this year. Belfast being, chief advocates of that, have played against us in every game. Nottingham been known to do it very well. We went up there midweek earlier in the season and said that their 2-man forecheck was our undoing late on in the game. Do you think that that's something which has triggered with Andrew Lord and that he's, made adjustments to suit that, or is it down to the players just playing better in these particular games?
I think it's going to be a combination, and it's probably very rare that you could single one out or the other, because players playing well with no decent game plan will probably lose, and vice versa, a well-coached team that aren't performing probably not going to win either. But I think it's been said numerous times that Andrew Lord is a proper student of the game. Watches a lot of videotape, he's constantly working on things, constantly trying to come up with new things, and it is a problem. If we've noticed it as something that affected us, you can bet your life that he'd have noticed it a long time before us, and has come up with it, that trying something new, leaving a guy high, and it was just that change. I think we discussed as well that Belfast were always going to struggle to keep the intensity up they showed at the start, but the But the players, whatever plans Andrew Lord put in place, and you know, if he did make adjustments through that period, they worked, but they worked as well as they did because every guy turned up. Everyone turned up. Everyone bought in. And, you know, as we said, you know, from first line to fourth line, all the D-men turned up and everyone bought into the systems, and it definitely showed. So it's a bit of a cop-out answer. I'm saying it's a bit of both, but it's got to be real.
No. I think that's fair. You know, Andrew Lowe puts a plan together and, you know, he can put a plan together all he wants, but if the guys on the ice don't want to go with it, then it doesn't happen. So, yeah, I think that's a fair answer. At John A. Oakes asks, who is the most underrated Devil? Aaron.
Did you not listen to my man in the match vote? Yeah, right now I definitely think the most underrated player in our team is Matthew Myers. You know, he's a great face-off guy. He scores big, greasy goals. I just think, you know, very rarely he puts a foot wrong. And he's just a grinder. Like, he works so hard on the penalty kill. He's unreal. You know, there's a few underrated players in our team. You could even say underwhelming, like Evan Mosey or... there's a few players that don't get the credit they deserve. Ben DeVolio is one of them. I think the guy is incredible. Yeah. He works so hard and scores some big goals for us. The list is quite long. You know, I can't say players like Joey Martin and things like that because, and Charlie Langley because they are something, they're different gravy, but there's
underrated. That good that we can't possibly write him as.
I wouldn't even say he's underrated. I'd say he's overrated. I think we big him up too much. I do.
Paul, do you have any challenge for?
Not a challenge.
Aaron mentioned Matthew Myers. Do you have an alternative?
For right now, definitely an alternative. I think Matthew Myers is consistently one of our most underrated players. Just the role that he plays is one that doesn't grab headlines as often. But I think
I know who you're going to pick as well.
I think Jake Morissette has started the season quite slowly. His role has changed massively. And he does seem to his hands are not working quite as well around the net. He's had a few chances fluffed in the last few weeks, but I think he's working his bag off. He's, like Myers, one of the best penalty killers that we've got. I think probably our best penalty killer. I think his line is working really well, his partnership with Ulmer, and then usually with Evan Mosey, sometimes with Livingston coming up onto the line too. And I just think because he started the year slow, because he's not playing a role where he's going to get a lot of goals, I just think he was almost written off by a lot of fans at the start of the year. I thought he'd started poorly as well, but I think he's playing out of his skin at the moment. And I just think that perception of him is sticking, and I don't think he's getting the appreciation he deserves, but it is quite a, obviously, Mo's been here for years and has usually played well and got the appreciation. But right now, I don't think he's getting the plaudits that he deserves for the way that his game is, especially compared to earlier on in the year.
Okay, fair point.
Who did you think I was going to say? Because I assume that you would have agreed with that.
No, I was actually going to go... with someone who does get an appreciation. I see bits and pieces about the most improved player, but I think at the moment it's got to be Bryce Reddick. We've talked about him being one of, you know, probably our 6D man in terms of quality and imports, but over the weekend he was just absolutely tremendous. Got his reward with a goal that gave us a massive, massive swing in momentum. And I just think that, you know, in the past, where his lack of size has caused him to take a couple of silly penalties behind the net, he's just adapted so well. He's working his absolute bag off. I think he's improved massively. And yeah, I do agree with you in a sense about Morissette because of his role changing, and people do maybe expect him to be the Morissette of old. But I think Aaron's point is perfect. There are a couple of players. He mentioned Sean Bendivoglio as well. There's a lot of players in that team that don't get the appreciation that they deserve. Or the rating that they deserve, purely because of how good our star power is with, you know, the likes of Longley, Martin, etc.
Not only that, just to go back to Aaron's point about being, you know, how with such a good team, and I think the Ramite from Dom Bate as well, saying, you know, that we outworked a team that's probably better on paper. When you've got a team that are all buying in, it's probably, do you think that's the reason that we can say we've got this many underrated players, that we can't possibly pick everyone out who's playing well, because most of them, if not all of them, are?
Yeah, for sure. And, like, I think that's it epitomises Dom's Ramite perfectly well. We are a team, and that's why, you know, singling out players at the moment is becoming difficult. You look at the game on Sunday. I don't think our two most productive players got a point. I think Fournier and Longley went pointless in that game.
He did.
So, you know, you just look, that says everything. You know, Martin's maybe not been quite as productive as those two players this year. And then this weekend, he just does what he does best, gets a power play goal, works his nuts off, was probably one of the, I think Martin was probably one of the underrated players of the weekend, in terms of how good his performance was. But yeah, you could just go on and on. We're playing really well as a team, and like Dom said, that's the perfect scenario, is that we've got so many underrated players that, you know, it's hard to pick one. But Dom did also ask us a burning question. When Joey your dad is fit,
we're getting replaced by Dom very soon. You know, this is becoming the Dom Bate show. he's got a question.
He has got a question. When Joey your dad is fit, who sits? I thought all players were fantastic this weekend, and there was chemistry on all four lines. It's a difficult choice for Andrew Lord when and if everyone is fit. I think I'm just going to dip into this one quite quickly, and that's where it's going to become difficult, or where it's going to become easy, is anyone that has a knock. We're very lucky that Evan Mosey's diverse and can play defence. Drew Schistel missed the game on Saturday. You know, is he carrying a knock, you know, down the stretch? Maybe he'll not play if Joey Haddad, for whatever reason, is suddenly fit on Wednesday. Does he play, Schistel sits and Mosey slots in like that? There's got to be players carrying knocks at this stage of the season.
We haven't had a spare. I think there's probably been about three games where we've had a fit player in the gantry. I think it can't be any more than that. So there must be guys playing hurt. Yeah, and there will be in every team in the league. You know, we're nothing unique there.
Is that your thoughts on it as well? Yeah.
Yeah, I would be very surprised if one person sits consistently, unless someone has a major drop in form.
Yeah, I totally agree. Aaron, anything to add?
No, I just agree. Yeah, that's all I got to say on that.
Thanks very much. Mandy Ravel Bates, at Red Bates, asks, apart from an epic weekend from team and fans, is it just me or have we seen a shift in the refereeing with calls made or not made? Is the camera on the helmet playing a part? Aaron, do you have thoughts on that? Is the referees wearing GoPros during games changing the way they've refereed in the game, in games previously?
I don't know. I think it depends on who's ref in the game, how the game is going to be refed, because there's some refs who like to let things flow and there's some refs that like to call everything. I think by the time the refs think about, they got, like, by the time the refs step onto the ice, I think the idea that they got a GoPro on their head just goes out the window and they forget about it. I think, you know, you can't see it. You don't know. I think you'll just forget. It's just another part of their equipment that's there. I don't really think it differs the way they call hockey. It just is on the night, you know. Some referees will call soft penalty, what you'd call soft penalty, and some refs will go as far to say that they don't call anything. But I think the way the weekend was refed, bar Sunday night where a couple of calls didn't go both ways, I thought it was ref fairly, and I think they just wanted to let the game flow, because at the end of the day it was two great teams going at it, and it was only a couple of niggly penalties that, you know, would have been not maybe soft penalties, but I think, well, they would have changed the outcome of the game, obviously. But I think, you know, I don't know. It wouldn't have, to me personally, like, it wouldn't have mattered if they called them, as long as they called them fairly. it wouldn't necessarily have mattered, because I think, you know, the game, I thought the way the game flowed and, you know, how fast time was going and stuff, and both teams going end to end, full pelt, I thought it was great to watch. And if we had to sit there every 2 minutes and have a break and play, the game had been a little bit more chippy and, you know, maybe we would have seen less skill and things like that, but who knows? Who knows?
Paul?
Just quick, I think Aaron touched on it a little bit, but I got this weekend especially, think the game's been let flow. I think we've said that the last couple of weeks as well, that I think it was only one penalty called against us in the two prior home games. It almost feels like the refs are getting ready for playoff hockey, where you traditionally think the games are just allowed to go that little bit further. So I don't know whether it's, you know, sellouts in our rink. I don't know if it's happening everywhere, or there's sellouts in the rink. You know, the atmosphere has been really good the last few weeks. This weekend especially felt like a championship weekend. There wasn't a title on the line as such, but the atmosphere was there. It was the top two teams in the league. And I think that can get in the referees, not get in their minds, but I think the referees that referee with a sense of the occasion, sense of the atmosphere, just think, we'll take a step back here. This isn't going to be about us, and we'll just call what we have to. And, you know, it doesn't always happen, but, you know, I think that's had a part of it as well, where we are in the season, where the atmosphere been, and the size of the games that we've been playing.
Okay, cool.
I'd love to see it.
Yeah, for sure. Do you think that, just a little side note to it, we, over the course of the two games, we had almost the same officials throughout it. James Cavanaugh was one of the linesmen on Saturday, and Lee Young took his place in the second game, with Tom Perrin, Andrew Dalton being referees, and Danny Beresford in both games. Do you think that has is that a positive way to deal with these double headers and these championship fields? Do you think that it does help to maintain the consistency, or would you like to, you know, see it isolated to if you have two different referees on one night, so say Darnell and Smith for whatever example, and then Perrin and Dalton to come in and just say, this is, you know, it's isolated during the game, we're going to call it how we want? Or do you like it that it's the two, or almost the same sets of officials, if you will?
I think especially in the referees, I like to see it. I think one of the biggest causes of frustration, you know, that you see from players in this league is the inconsistency in refereeing. It happens in every league. But you know, if you're playing at home against Nottingham, and then the next day you're playing in Manchester, different teams, different people, it'll be different. People expect it. I think two teams in the same ring playing against each other two nights in a row, you can't have a massive change in the refereeing, because it's going to lead to frustration. It's going to lead to tempers boiling over potentially. I just think it makes for the players know where they are. Players should know where they are within a few minutes of a game with a referee.
Mm. Yeah.
If you've got the same referee, that's almost 120 minutes of hockey where everyone should be on the same page. And I think that did show. That's why the penalty counts were quite low. And, you know, the things that were called, on the most part, were penalties that for or against you could agree with. And we used dangerous things.
Yeah, it makes for a better spectacle overall, I think.
Yes.
Yeah. A little side note as well regarding the GoPros. I just want to make the point that if I'd like to see the officials just call it as they normally would, regardless of whether they've got a camera on or not. I think that they put in place, obviously for the benefit sometimes of video. Some of the footage of the goals against Guildford were particularly good. The Ice Time TV put out, but it's all down to. I think one of the benefits of it is to educate the referees and train referees. And I think if you call it differently based on wearing a camera, then you're not going to benefit from it. So I'd like to think it doesn't change based on whether you're wearing a camera or not. So I just wanted to put that point across. That's all.
Excellent. I think we did have another question from Lewis Hawkins, but we've had quite a lot of input this week, so we're going to just carry that second question from Lewis over into next week's show.
Thank you everyone for sending burning questions as well. And again, a great mix, giving us lots to talk about, and fantastic to get so much contribution and get so many people involved.
That's it. And talking about the stuff that people want us to talk about and yeah. the game that maybe wouldn't have come up when we were talking about it. So it's brilliant. And, you know, just keep sending them through all through the week. You don't need to wait for us to ask. Once we've got them, we'll hold them and do it in the next show, which will be next week. So we're going to do them every week. Yeah. Right. We're going to very quickly look at the upcoming games. So Wednesday, relatively quick turnaround for the Devils after the big weekend, the trip up to Sheffield for the rearranged game from the start of December. A very different Sheffield team to the one that we played. I think the last time we played would have been in October, the 7-1 game, Sean?
Yeah, very possibly, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, there's been numerous changes, probably 7 or 8 players out, a similar number in. Paul Thompson's left. We've definitely played him in
the... Yeah, Barrasso was was coaching that game, yeah.
Yes, yeah. So, you know, but a lot of change. But they're still a team that's struggling. They took a 4-point weekend over Milton Keynes, who seem to have major injury trouble. I think they finished with 13 skaters.
Ooh.
Sunday. And Sheffield find themselves in 9th at the moment, so outside the playoff places, not where a club their size expects or really should be with the money that's on the ice, you would imagine. Aaron, it's always a tricky place to go. Do you see it as potentially an even more dangerous team in that it's a bit of a wounded animal and maybe Sheffield want to make a claim against the team sitting at the top of the table?
I think sitting at the top of the table brings the fact that every team is going to raise their game to play when they play against you. So that's expected. But I think this year, Sheffield, although, you know, like they've had the budget and coaches in and out and, you know, different changes, I don't think they, right now, they don't pose a threat to us. But saying that, we're in a position where we're fighting for a league title, they're in a position fighting for a playoff space. It's not as if they're sitting in the middle of the table where results don't necessarily matter. You know, every point for them means they're 1 point closer to the playoffs, and every point for us means we're 1 point closer to the league. So you could say we're on similar level peggings for, you know, who wants it more kind of thing. So, you know, they're going to be up for it. You've got to expect a tough game. They've got some big characters in that team. So I'm expecting a difficult game. I'm not expecting to go up there and walk through them. And, you know, since we've seen them last, there's been so many player changes. It's going to be a different team. You don't know how you're going to be able to stack up against them. And it's been a long time as well since we last played them. And we've only played them, I think, twice.
Yep, the 7-1 at home was the last game, and the 6-2 win in Sheffield right at the start of the season.
Exactly. So we've only played them twice so far this year, which compared to other teams isn't a lot. So, you know, it's going to be a challenge for us. You know, we're coming off a weekend where we threw all everything and the kitchen sink at the team. So, you know, as long as we get our rest in, Lord will have the team prepared, no doubt. And I'm not expecting to lose. I am fully expecting a win, possibly even a convincing win. But just because of, you know, the difference in skill, quality, and the way the teams are built. But it's going to be a challenge. It's never easy and fun going to... Well, it has been fun going there a couple of times over the last 4 years. It's definitely going to be a challenge. And, you know, I think we're going to be up for it. You know, we're on a streak right now, 9-0, we're making 10-0 double figures, and on to the next one.
On to the next one, which will be Nottingham. So, you know, tricky trip on Wednesday, potentially, Sean, and then, you know, a place that we haven't picked up a point yet this season, and we do struggle in. We beat Nottingham consistently in Cardiff, but for whatever reason, we struggle in Nottingham, but we'll be facing a team without Shimenez as head coach, with Rick Strachan taking over duties for the rest of the year after Shimenez was removed. I think after something like 13 losses in 18 games, I think Nottingham have delivered. So, you know, yet another change beast since we last played him, Sean, but, you know, a difficult place to go, especially for us.
Yeah, Nottingham historically has not been a happy hunting ground for us. it's going to be a bit of a change for us going up there. Obviously, we're so used to what Lottie can bring. They're normally a very, very offensive-minded team, but I can't see them setting up that way with Rick Strachan as head coach when he was, you know, at the helm at Hull. His teams were particularly negative, but they got some wins out of it, so we have to take Nottingham seriously. When they do get their offensive chances, they take them. They got some very, very talented players. Guptill, Kovacs, you name it. They've got scoring through the lineup, but they're off the back of they managed to get a win in Fife, in overtime off the back of a Scottish triple header. I think they also, they played midweek against Guildford, in the Challenge Cup semi-final. So, you know, as much as we've got a game against Sheffield, they've got a game which they really want to go out and win as well on Wednesday. So it's going to be a tough test. As always, like we just said, tough place to go, tough place to get a result. I'd like to think that based on our rich vein of form, it's a victory we can pick up, and there's no better time for us to get a game in Nottingham straight off the back of almost straight off the back of a changing coach and us on the run of form we're at. We couldn't have gone to Nottingham at a better time, other than maybe when we're going to Sheffield. You know, switch the fixtures, and that'd be perfect timing. But it's worked out this way. We have to go there on Saturday and give it our best, because they're not going to lie down and let us take 2 points out of there easily.
Definitely not. A big crowd expected in Nottingham. They've announced already. Yeah. So, you know, potentially another big atmosphere for the team.
And they always turn up and play well against us as well. So it's just so standard, really. Yeah.
Yeah. This is our last trip to Nottingham. We haven't picked up a point there yet. I'd really like to see us not get swept in Nottingham this year. So, feeling it, let's bring it. And then the road trip continues. So the Devils will travel up from Nottingham to Fife, or to Kirkcaldy, on Sunday. You know, it's a road stand. It's probably not a bad way of doing it, Aaron, in that it'll break the travel up for the Devils rather than having to make it all the way Cardiff to Fife on the Sunday. But you know, another place that is difficult to go. We've had a couple of good results there this year, and again, a last visit somewhere. So it's our last visit to Fife. And your thoughts on that? With you know, at the end of quite a long, well, a decent length trip.
Yeah, you know, it'll be good for the guys. I think, you know, spend a bit of time with each other, gel a little bit more. You know, at this key thing in the season, three road trips, three tough teams. This Fife is going to be, I think, probably the toughest test for us. You know, it's the last game in a run of three. Fife are a good team. They got a lot of skill, a lot of speed. Could be another battle of the netminders. You know, Shane Owen is incredible. The last time we went up, we did shut them out, and we did come away 6-0. I can't see that being the story this time. I think they're going to win that one back. Fife, they were pitted to, you know, challenges for the league title at the beginning of the season. A couple of injuries went against them, and, you know, they found their way out of that, but they got a lot to play for still. And they're going to want that. They're going to want a W back, especially in their own barn. I think we're 2-0 up there this year, so they're going to want to make that square and try and get one back on us. And we're going to be a tired team, but if we can come up the other side with the 2 points and, you know, six altogether, that'll be a very happy chappy.
That would be nice. And Sean, just a quick note, you were talking about timings of games. Fife have got a double header in Belfast, Friday and Saturday. So, you know, not a bad time. You know, I was talking about our trek to get to Fife. They're going to have, you know, just as much, if not more, sort of miles in their legs by the time we get there.
Yeah, for sure. And as Aaron said, Fife are a good side. They got a very good goalie. You've said it a million times. Some very, very good scoring threats. Hopefully they can, you know, maybe do us a little bit of a favour on the Friday, Saturday in Belfast and tire themselves out on Sunday. So they could really do us a massive favour, pump Belfast on both nights and then let us pump them on Sunday because they're so tired from pumping Belfast on Friday, Saturday. So that would be ideal, really.
Sounds nice.
Yeah, it sounds wonderful. I don't think it'll happen like that, but, you know, One can dream. We have, I think we won our last three games against Fife, taking a point in the other one, in a 5-4 overtime loss in the Viola Arena this year. So we've got a good record against them. And like you said, our last two trips there have been excellent. So yeah, glad we've already taken 4 points out of there. It's our last one. They're a very, very good side at home normally. So the last time we went up there and pumped them 6-0 was the game after they hammered Nottingham at the NIC as well. So like I said, hopefully they can do the same to Belfast on either the Friday or the Saturday and be very, very tired come Sunday.
Yes, what a lovely thought to finish on. That is the end of the show. Thank you again one last time for all of your Ramites and your burning questions. Please get them in through the week after the Sheffield game and then after this week's road double in Nottingham and Fife. Sean,
just a quick one. Yeah, we are going to be doing play-by-play from Nottingham on Saturday. So tune in, give us a follow, retweet, make people aware. Nottingham's still in the dark ages with no webcast. They have been known to do it when they sell out in the past. I don't expect them to do it this time. So the best place to get your real-time updates is at Red Army Roundup on Twitter. And yours truly will update you as best as I can.
And me and Aaron will drunkenly chirp Sean if he makes any mistakes. So please point them out if he tweets any mistakes. So thank you again. Do make sure you tune in for play-by-play. Sean does it very well. I was far too scared to do it on my own in Braehead. and get your suggestions in. So thank you for listening. And for now, that is your Red Army Roundup. Devon side, the Devon side. Ever seen